you always get the JM underpriced. Now, here's Fox Sports 1's NFL senior reporter, Alex Marvez, on The Joe Rowe Show with Curtis Stevenson.
All right, I'm calling it one of the best regular season lineups in the history of the National Football League. Regular season is getting ready to take place this weekend. Seven games with a lot of meaning. And, of course, Alex Marvez is at one of the big ones in Philly as Seattle will visit them in a big game for both teams. Alex, how are you this morning?
JoJo doing absolutely great. And you are correct, sir. So much on the line this week. 12 teams in the AFC at 500 or better. And in the NFC, the possibility that a team that opened the season 9-1, the Arizona Cardinals, may become the first team to ever start 9-1 and fail to make the playoffs. And it all starts tonight, Dallas and Chicago, Thursday Night Football. It's when we start to see the, the wheat and the chaff, or whatever that old expression is. They start to separate, but it's true. I mean, this is where the good teams stand up and the bad teams fall by the wayside.
You know what, Alex, too? Boy, I'll tell you what, don't ever let anybody tell you the importance of the quarterback. You can just ask Arizona right now, right?
Oh, my goodness. And I know, and I asked Bruce Arians about that Tuesday night on my SiriusXM NFL radio show. And Bruce, you know, later the next day, he said it was a dumb question. And he was kidding around, but they don't have any other options other than Drew Stanton. And this offense
Correct.
Has completely stalled without Carson Palmer. And it's right. It's a quarterback-driven league, unless you have an offensive system that can minimize the stress on the quarterback. And in this case, that's something that Chip Kelly has done with Mark Sanchez. Not to say that Mark maybe wouldn't have been able to reinvent himself someplace else. We'll never know. But all of a sudden, this guy is looking like the Sanchez. How much of that is a system? In Arizona, they got a problem. They're a pass first, run second type of team. And when you don't have Carson Palmer and you've got Drew Stanton, that isn't a recipe for success.
All right. You mind spending a little time on Ryan Tannehill with me?
Absolutely.
Always
no
a hot
problem.
Topic, and the Big O calls it the 20-yard box is getting smaller and won't work. I want to get your take on Ryan Tannehill overall, where he ranks. I just want what he's improved on and where he still needs to go, if you don't mind.
I think what we saw Monday night, the old Ryan Tannehill, and maybe under the old Mike Sherman offense, but I think that this team, it might have even been earlier this season, I don't think they would have taken what the Jets defense was giving them. I think they would have tried to force the point. I think they would have kept trying to throw downfield. Instead, what did Ryan Tannehill do? He hit targets that were open. The Jets surprised everyone. Joe, you were there. You saw it. I mean, and you have a better view than us when it comes to looking at the overall field. With that zone defense that the Jets played, how common is that? How often do we see Rex Ryan say, no, I'm not going to play the press coverage. I'm going to drop in zone. I'm going to do some combination coverages. It was a different type of defense than I think what the Dolphins expected, what everyone expected out of the New York Jets. Yet Tannehill didn't make the huge mistake. Yes, Calvin Pace dropped an interception. I get that. But I'd rather have a quarterback who minimizes his mistakes and gives you a chance to win at the end like Ryan Tannehill did than have a guy who's trying to force it and say, oh, well, because we don't set up the deep pass, we have to throw deep. And by the way, the one time that Mike Wallace was open deep, what happens? Oops.
Yeah.
You remember the Dolphins had a wide receiver named Oops back in the late 1960s? They did.
And did they?
Yes, they did, actually. A guy named Oops. He was this great track star, but every time he would drop a pass, he would say Oops. So I think we have Oops 2 electric boogaloo going on with Mike Wallace because he just isn't a reliable receiver. But I get it. I understand where Big O is coming from. And, eventually you're going to have to make some plays.
Yes, you are.
Downfield.
I agree.
But if this is what the Jets are giving, don't make mistakes. And that's the thing about Ryan Tannehill. I thought he played a smart game, a good enough game to win. And honestly, that's all that matters. The Dolphins won a game that normally they would lose. Joe, how long was it since the Dolphins won a road game in which they were trailing in the fourth quarter the way that they did? It had been forever. I'm not going to sit here and beat this team up about winning and staying alive in the playoff race. And that's what it seems like so many folks in South Florida want to do. They're looking for style points. Brother, take the win.
No, you're right. All it says actually Monday morning when you get up, or Sunday night if you look at the standings, it either has a W or a loss. It
right.
doesn't say great win, bad loss. All it says is win or loss, period. Hey, while we're moving on this topic, with this team right now as they get ready to play the Ravens, what's your take on this physical Ravens team? Dolphins have struggled through the years with them. Do you like this matchup or not?
It's a little ugly, especially because of the injuries at the corner position. Right now, Courtland Finnegan, iffy, as we know, with that ankle. And if he doesn't play and with no Jamar Taylor and maybe another Joseph R.J. Sanford, and that doesn't bode well when you look at the two wide receivers that Baltimore has. I know Steve Smith's production has dipped lately, but the guy still plays hard. He can still have a monster game, and we know what Torrey Smith can do, especially in the deep game. And then it's an unusual Baltimore offense. And I say it's unusual because it used to be the norm. But now Joe Flacco takes more snaps from under center than any other quarterback in the league by far. He gets there, and then it's all, you know, play action. It's waggles. It's, you know, this is a game where the Dolphins, if their discipline isn't on and they're not following their keys and they're not just taking care of their own responsibilities, they're in for an awfully long day. It is not a great matchup. But, you know, look at that Baltimore Ravens secondary. You talk about the Dolphins passing game getting on track. These guys are horrible. I mean, this is a really bad Baltimore secondary because of all the injuries that have afflicted it. Now, they're supposed to get one of their corners, Asa Jackson, back. Ladarius Webb has returned from the back injury. But Jimmy Smith, their best corner, is out, and it has been a nightmare scenario for Baltimore stopping the pass. So if the offensive line can hold up and give Ryan Tannehill some time, he could put up some points. I expect this game to be in the 20s for both teams at least. They should be able to move the football on each other. But you know what, Joe? Good teams like the Miami Dolphins, if they're a good team, yeah, they win this game because there's no margin for error. You're going to Foxborough the next week, and I don't know if you're going to win up in New England. So if you're talking two losses here for the Dolphins, that would put them in a best-case scenario at 9-7. And in this AFC, probably not going to cut it.
Nope, and that's why if you need to be motivated, look where you're going the following week. I'm with you. You've got to take care of this game. This game, I don't like to put the whole season. You still got four left, but, man, this game is –
monster.
Considering there's so many, there're gonna be a bunch of teams go to 8 wins because a lot of those 7-5 teams will be playing and they're gonna have a good chance to win. You know, an interesting game. What happens with New England going back to San Diego? What do you expect?
Yeah, you know, the Patriots have won, I believe it's 5 of the past 6 times they played the Chargers. They just seem to have a formula when they play them well. Their last loss was, I think, back in like 2010, 2011, and that was in San Diego. But, you know, it rained yesterday in San Diego, which means the Patriots are in full force, right? I mean, that's and that's true. I mean, it's only because New England is out there. You know, look, the Patriots, they did not return home after the Green Bay game. They went to San Diego to de-thaw. I think this will be a refreshed Patriots team that you see on the field. Chargers are a hard team to figure out. I talked to Eric Weddle and, you know, the Chargers safety, and he said this: if you don't make Tom Brady move his feet, if you don't make him uncomfortable in the pocket, you're in for a long day. And that's got to be the key for New England. I think for the Chargers, you've seen Ryan Matthews, the carry total lately, 16, 14, 13. I think they're looking to get 20, 22, 23, 24 this week and ride Ryan Matthews. You know, use the same formula that they did against Denver all that time against New England. And that is to just run the football like crazy. Hope that you can make some hay there and just be judicious in the passing game. And if they can do that, they will definitely keep it close. They got a chance to win. I'm not going to doubt this Chargers team. But it also shows you too, Joe, how much of a week-to-week league this is, and I hate to use that cliche, but it's true. I mean, this is the same Chargers team that lost 37-0 to the Dolphins, 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff, yet they come back a month later, same 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff, and they beat the Ravens.
Come from
Baltimore.
Behind.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just so tough. So that's why I try to tell people with this Jets game, don't read into everything that this is where the Dolphins team is at right now, because you have to take each game on an individual level, and then at the end of the season start stringing together, okay, this is where, you know, if you notice a notable trend. But gosh, that's why it could be a very different Dolphins team you see this week. It could be a very different Chargers team this week. But they are also too are in a must win type of situation, knowing that, you know, they lose some tiebreakers against some teams, including the Miami Dolphins.
Did you think Cleveland was going to make a change of quarterback, or did you think that Hoyer was going to stay the guy?
You would think that because of the spark that Johnny Manziel provided, that this was something they would think about. But here's when I talked to John Greco, the Browns guard, last night, he was telling me that, you know, this was a decision that was not made in a vacuum. You know, Mike Pettine consulted with the team's veteran leadership council. You know, he consulted with the assistant coaches. This wasn't just the head coach saying, I want to do this. He wanted to get feedback from everybody. And I think there was some real strong support for Brian Hoyer remaining there because he has been there for them in clutch time before. He is 10-5 as a Browns starter, which, I mean, you may as well put him in the Pro Football Hall of Fame considering the direct that the Browns have had under center in recent years. So that's why I think that he's got that support. But you know that there's going to be a quick hook if he struggles. And I would think that that's something he should be looking over his shoulder. But that's something that Brian Hoyer has been doing his whole life. It's not like he's been a pampered quarterback. I mean, the guy spent almost an entire season out of football in 2012. Nobody could sign him. Anyone in the NFL could have had Brian Hoyer the entire year. Nobody bothered signing him. So that underdog role is something he embraces. Great matchup coming up against Indianapolis. One thing that disturbs you, though, the Browns, 17 turnovers the past few weeks is what their defense has generated. They've generated only 36 points off those turnovers. Now you can say, now it's appropriate.
Well, no, listen, it's been bad on both sides because they turn it over, too, and haven't been able to overcome it. Hey, real quickly, too, while we're rolling along here and we're looking at these different games, Rex Ryan, after what just happened, I mean, he looked crushed after that game Monday night.
Yep.
Is he done?
He's done as Jets head coach. The question is this: number one, does he get another shot as a head coach in the NFL? And you don't laugh. I mean, but the guy has that presence to be a good head coach. The problem is he can't.
I agree with you, man. Yeah. I don't give him some talent. And I think he's going to be the hottest defensive coordinator if not, right? How many teams?
That's the thing. But does he want to do that? Would he rather go to the announcing booth, recharge his batteries for a year, and try to come up with a game plan in which he assembles a new coaching staff, offensive guys that he's comfortable with, but he has to figure out what he's doing on the offensive side of the football? I mean, this isn't just a one-year thing. This is a five-year thing in New York. But even go back beyond that. Remember, he was defensive coordinator of the offensively challenged Baltimore Ravens before Baltimore got good on offense. I mean, he's used to that. If he doesn't change his ways and find some answers on offense and adjust and come into the 21st century with his philosophies, then I think he's always going to continue to make the same mistakes. But, no, I think Rex does a great job. I would love to – you know, I enjoy the guy. I think he's a very sincere guy. You see the way his players play for him. But, no, his team is toast. And now the big question to me is, does John Isaac remain the general manager? And who finishes where in the draft order? Because Marcus Mariota is going to be that number one pick in the draft. Who's going to have a shot at him? Will it be a team like the Oakland Raiders that already has Derek Carr, a potential franchise quarterback, or – you know, Tampa Bay, do they have it? They need a quarterback. Tennessee needs a quarterback. You know, it'll be curious to see who's there, because if Jacksonville gets it, for example, all of a sudden they're sitting on gold because somebody's going to want to trade up to get this guy.
Hey, Alex, before I let you go, can I get your Gator blood out for a second?
No problem.
McElwain, what's going on with that?
This is all buyout talk. I mean, they're trying to get the deal done, and Colorado State has a $7.5 million buyout clause for this guy. And it's, I know, how did you negotiate a guy? $7.5 million buyout for a coach at Colorado State. I know, but they also committed to him for 10 years at $1.5 million a season. So he was taking care of his family with a $15 million contract. I get it. Look, if the Gators can't get the deal done by later today, tomorrow, I think they move on. And it may be a type of concession where they agree to play Colorado State in Denver, you know, as part of a big deal, because that would be a lot of jackpot, you know, at the box office for Colorado State, help with their national visibility. You know, at some point, though, they have to realize if this coach doesn't want to stay there and wants to move on, do they want an unhappy coach? Do they want a guy who may challenge them in court with his whole dream job definition of what it is? It's a bit of a mess. I think that, you know, when Jeremy Foley got on that plane without his head coach, that wasn't a good sign for the Florida Gators.
Real quickly, what's the connection that he became their guy, go-to guy, so quickly?
Well, I think they wanted to move really quick. First, it was Hugh Freeze that they contacted at Ole Miss. Hugh Freeze was Archie Manning helped give him the job at Ole Miss. This is a Mississippi guy. He ain't going anywhere. The Gators helped get him a raise from the Ole Miss athletic department. Good for him, right?
Yep.
Then it was McElwain. I mean, he has success as Alabama's offensive coordinator. They've known that. And that's where there's time. And, you know, he's recruited Florida before, and apparently he's willing to take on members of the coaching staff. He wants to keep the defensive staff intact. So that's something that would be a real positive for him. Yeah, and he scores points. And you know, it's a type of hire that would make people in the athletic department happy. I mean, not athletic department, boosters happy, because he's a guy who's had success. Look what he's done with Colorado State. That team really had hit rock bottom. They're 9-3 this year. They beat Boston College. They've had some good wins. I mean, so I think it made sense as a hire to me. Trust me. He's not the biggest name in the world, but anyone that knows college football knows how talented this guy is.
All right. That's fair enough. That's what I need. I need a little Gator fix. Thank you so much, Alex.
And Newport Joe, now, what is this deal, though, with Kim Bokamper retiring? I mean, I'm so happy for Kim, but now with CBS having a job open and your non-compete at some point ending, oh, I'm sorry, Joe. We'll talk a little later off the air, okay?